everybody, and welcome back to Paddock Project. I'm your host, Tiggy, and I have everybody's favorite presenter with me today, the one and only Laura Winter. I think your name gets said in our Discord during race weekends, maybe more often than some driver names. Our listeners and the broader F1 community just absolutely adore you. So I am so grateful to you for being here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. What a wonderful introduction. And thank you for reaching out to be on the podcast. It sounds like it is such, it's doing so well, but equally it's got a predominantly female community around it as well, which is awesome to see. So I'm delighted to be on. Thank you very much. And I will apologize in advance. My little dog is demanding to be on my lap. So if he does want to get involved at any point, I am sorry.
I think everybody is more than okay with that. No, you're so right. 90% of our audience is female, which feels crazy to say in sports, but we're so happy about that.
That's incredible, because 40% of the audience in F1 is female, which is already an amazing stat. We're kind of used to a 70-30 split, right? So 90% is amazing. And yeah, you should be very proud of the community you've built, for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, F1 is growing and growing on the female side, and we're very happy about that. So thank you for all you're doing to shed light on women in motorsport. But how is the off season treating you? Do you get much of an off season?
Yeah, I do. I've been quite careful to take a lot of January off work. But actually, there's still a lot of kind of admin to do and planning and prep for the year and all that stuff. But spending it doing lots of wholesome January things in the gym, eating well, all that kind of stuff. I do find, though, like, just living at home, like keeping house and having the dog, and you're really busy. So it's like off work, but not, I think life's still as busy. I managed to fill my days very easily.
That's great.
It's been good. I think I'm now itching to get going again, though, for sure.
That's perfect timing then, because we're just about there.
Yeah, I know. I'm apprehensive in a good way.
Yeah, it's going to be a great season. We were spoiled last year, but I am so excited for what this year has in store. So you're a presenter for F1 TV, but you've had your hand in so many different sports, including you've also been a competitive swimmer yourself and a former rower, which I was so excited to see because I'm also a former rower. So that was very fun.
Yes.
There aren't that many of us out there, but
you know the pain then, don't you, of erg tests and 6 a.m. in the dark on the water and all of that. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, so worth it. What a sport, but just brutal. The training is savage.
It absolutely is. I think I will never get on an erg again, safe to say. So yeah. We're past that. But sport has been such a huge thread throughout your life. So take us through that journey from an athlete to now being a presenter, how you've gotten where you are today.
Yeah, I think I grew up obviously swimming competitively from about the age of 7. And there's some amazing stats that I'm seeing now. Something like 94% of female CEOs or top level women in companies did sport.
Wow.
So doing sport is such a pathway to strong leadership in life as well. And I'm only kind of just realizing the impact of that and how important it is for women and girls to participate in sport, as well as obviously being a fan of sport. I was also a huge fan of sport. So I watched pretty much anything I could get my hands on. Sport was always on in the house. So we had the Olympics, Rugby World Cup, Football World Cup, soccer for you guys. honestly, Wimbledon, tennis, pretty much anything I was watching and devouring and just absolutely loved. And the Olympic Games as well, every 4 years, that was kind of my big highlight. And that's when, of course, you saw a lot of the swimming and the rowing too. So yeah, sport just was the backdrop of my life. I kind of couldn't imagine a world without it. And then alongside that, loved English and theatre studies at school. So my career has somehow managed to bring them all together, I guess, from competing as an athlete to then realizing that the next obvious step for me was to talk about sport.
Yeah. And do you feel like having been an athlete has made that transition easier for you when you're talking about it, when you're telling stories around it?
Yeah, interesting. I think so, because I am in no way saying I can relate to the elite level that you see from you know, the drivers and from Olympic swimmers and cyclists and whatever else. But I think what you can what you can relate to is, even though it was a much lower level, like the regional championships in swimming were kind of my Olympics. Like that's where I got to. And you know what it is to be incredibly nervous. You know what it is to have trained so hard, turned yourself inside out for something. You know what it is to win and to achieve that, and also to fall short. And obviously you fail far more than you kind of win, I guess. And you kind of remember those failures more too, which is painful.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, you do have an appreciation and a respect, a deeper respect maybe for what these guys and girls are going through and put themselves through for us, for entertainment, because sport is such a good source of entertainment for us, but it's also these people's livelihoods and dreams for, you know, forever. And it's been, yeah, it's amazing to tell those stories now and basing it on how I kind of imagine I would have felt in those positions.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to get into all things F1, but you've mentioned the Olympics, and obviously you were there this summer. Was that such a bucket list pinch me moment for you?
Oh my God. Yeah. So I worked London 2012 in my first job out of university, which was in social media and communications for the International Rowing Federation. So it was a dream, like a home games was incredible. But to actually then achieve a games broadcasting, that was a real bucket list moment. And to do it in swimming, it just felt like this pure full circle moment. I remember, it's so cheesy, I remember walking out of the pool the last session. I was crying my eyes out, and I was messaged my mom, and I was on the phone to her actually, I called her. And I just said, I just felt like I was born to have done this. And it's been the biggest privilege and honor to work Paris. It was, yeah. Paris is one of my favorite cities too. So to achieve that dream and to be in the backdrop of that, it was so special.
No, you absolutely crushed that. And what a dream for your mom.
Thank you.
You're a parent, I feel like, to see that full circle moment of a child going from like competitive swimmer to then commenting and presenting on it at the Olympics is just so cool.
Yeah. Well, she was up at 5 a.m. you know, with me to go training. Like, she lived and breathed every second of swimming with me. So yeah, it was super special.
That's amazing. Okay, so let's dive into F1. Let's say it's a race weekend. Take us through sort of a typical run of show for the weekend, if there is such a thing. I'm sure every Grand Prix is a little bit different, but what are you doing to prepare? What meetings are you attending? Who are you working with? Give us a little bit of a rundown of, paint the picture of what a weekend looks like for you.
Yeah, so it's busy. And that's a good thing. So kind of in the days before, like the Monday and Tuesday, I'll really get into the meat of prep. So I'll look at the previous year's race, any track characteristics, track changes, the highlights of last year, the results of last year. I'll look at the current standings, the headlines coming into that weekend, the talking points too, kind of make notes. I think I'm kind of known now for how many notes I make. I make so many notes. I write down everything. Other people, of course, use iPads and touchpads and laptops and whatever else. I handwrite stuff because I find if I've done that, it's in my head. Then on the Wednesday, that's typically our travel day. If it's a race further away, it might be on a Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, depending. Like Australia, we do Sunday, because obviously you lose pretty much a day. And then, yes, Wednesday travel day. Wednesday night, we tend to just assimilate, get used to where we are. Dinner, a couple of drinks, just getting ready for the weekend, basically. It's always quite nice on a Wednesday, the kind of calm before the storm.
Yeah.
And then the Thursday is media day, so plenty of interviews. We divvy them up really amongst the likes of Lawrence Barreto, who's obviously our correspondent and the F1.com writer. And we've got whoever else we've got on site as well. So I'll sometimes jump in and help on those, but those guys do share them out amongst the writers. Then I'm preparing for weekend warm-ups. So we'll have a discussion with producer Joe, our producer, and
producer
she and
Joe.
I will have a conversation on the phone. Yeah, producer Joe.
I love that.
She both loves and hates it when I call her out, but we love it so much. She's so excellent, honestly. And she's not shy, but she's behind the camera,
yeah.
Right? Like, and that's where she wants to be. And I'm like, we should be doing podcasts with her because she is phenomenal at her job, honestly. So yeah, we have a chat. We go through the talking points for the weekend based on the interviews for that day. And then weekend warm-up generally, depending on the race and the time of day, is generally on like 4:30, 5:30, a bit later for a dusk race. So yeah, and that's the Thursday. Friday, then we get into the swing of it. We have pre and post shows for pre-practice 1 and 2. And we may have a couple more interviews to do generally with team principals or something on a Friday. Saturday, again, free practice 3. We have pre and post shows and then enter qualifying. And that turnaround actually seems really short. I don't know why. I always kind of get caught out where I'm like, oh my God, we need to be in positions in like 45 minutes. Yeah. And it just seems a really short gap between the two. And then Sunday, tend to get to track around kind of 3 hours before the race start. And then we have a tech check, make sure everything's working. And then I just get into like full prep mode. The pre-race show to me feels like, it's funny because a lot of people say to me, oh, just one day left on race day. And I'm like, this is the most important. Like, even if you've nailed the weekend before, if you get to a pre-race show or a post-race show and you kind of mess it up, it doesn't feel like you've had a good weekend. It's like that, it starts right now. So yeah.
That's awesome.
That's when I get really into like full focus zone, make all my notes heading into the pre-race show, and then yeah, showtime. And I love pre-race show and the grid and the chaos and the mayhem, and the atmosphere is always incredible. And then the race, which we kind of watch together in the office. It's so funny. You're at the track. I never watch a single second of any racing live. Yeah. I never see a car. I don't see cars on track. Literally. I think I've been trackside once in testing and I was like, oh my God, they're fast, aren't they? Like, I just don't see it.
Oh, there they are.
We're just basically watching on telly like you guys are at home. And then, yeah, post-race is always, I love post-race. There's a lot of like nerves jangling and excitement for that one because it's a little bit more unpredictable. You don't know, obviously, the result until the results happened. You don't know which interviews you're going to get. You don't know which stories you're going to find and tell, and yeah, it's good fun. So that's the kind of run of the weekend, and I obviously share that with our pundits and reporters, and I'm the sort of lead presenter, so that kind of anchor position, and then the reporters will run around the paddock and get reaction from team principals and maybe a driver or two for us, and then our pundits will be the ones I'm asking questions to, just about their opinion on what's happened and giving a hot take or two.
That's amazing. I mean, I'm exhausted just thinking about it, just hearing about it, but so impressed with all you do. And a little birdie has told us that you are probably the most prepared at a race weekend of anyone in that paddock. Which
I don't know. I think there are some very impressive people in that paddock. I think the one thing is that I came into motorsport relatively later in life and watched a bit of it as a kid, but not as much as other sports. So I kind of constantly feel like I don't know enough. And there are days where I'm like, okay, I think I've done my research now. I think I've prepped, but I think F1 is a sport that changes so much, or there'll be some race or some session where some rule will suddenly pop up and that I didn't know before.
Yeah.
Every day is a school day in F1 and I'm constantly learning. But I think that's such an amazing thing to continually learn as you get older. I think we can just come out of school and uni and stop. And so I want to make sure that, yeah, I'm always learning. I'm kind of a nerd, so I love making notes and writing. You know, I was super academic at school and, yeah, a bit of a nerd, a bit of a geek.
That's so great.
It's nice.
That makes it fun, doesn't it? So how much creative control would you say you have over your broadcasts? Like, what percent is scripted and directed, whether that's your producer or someone else, versus kind of off the cuff that you have the ability to create yourself?
Yeah, so generally in a pre-show, a lot more of it is defined. So we'll say, right, we've got a 7-minute interview with a reserve driver at their garage in the pit lane, and you kind of have to hit those marks. But the content with which we're talking about, that can be relatively free-flowing. So Joe and I will sort of hash out those talking points, and we've got to hit those marks of what we want to say. So we're not just kind of telling the story through the show. We almost sort of tease it up. So we'll like build up to the qualifying highlights and then we'll talk about qualifying. So you don't want to put all of your best information in the first section and then you've got nothing left. So you've got to kind of just like weave it through and tell the stories as they come. So there's an element of pre-race, which is mostly defined. I'd say defined because it can go out the window. Yeah, there are certain marks we definitely need to hit, like time out the pit lane onto the grid and stuff like that. But generally, it's a little bit, it can be a bit loose. And then on the grid, it can just go to like go out the window. But there are hard counts to the anthem. And then obviously a hard count, which is basically where Joe's in my ear counting down 10, 9. And that's when you're like, I've got to hit your mark and you've got to get what you want to say out and you've got to hit it on 1, 0. Wow. And it's, yeah, that's, they make me, I love a hard count. It makes me excited. Yeah, it gets you going for sure.
I've got some butterflies just thinking about it.
Yeah, it's those real adrenaline moments where you're like, I've got to nail this, and you're throwing into like the race. So it's kind of got to be as epic as you can make it. And yeah, so, yeah, we have creative control for sure. There are just elements that are defined that we need to hit post-race. Like I'd say 10% of it is like we have some structure in terms of where we think certain elements like the standings or, you know, next race or an interview will go. But generally it's free flow, which is fun, but a little bit more chaotic. And it's taken me probably a little bit of time to find comfort in that chaos.
Yeah. Do you still get nerves?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That never goes away.
I'm like, yeah. But I think as soon as those nerves go, I saw this thing which said that nerves and excitement are the same emotion, the same physical reaction in the body, but it's how the brain frames them and contextualizes that emotion. So it's just adrenaline, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, you can either go, I'm really excited for this and feel bubbly and happy, or you can feel like, you could want to be anywhere else in the world. And I've definitely had both. And there are moments where I get really nervous, but mostly now can frame it in a way where I'm kind of, it's a readiness, not a, I want to be anywhere else in the world, get me out of here type thing.
I like that.
So, yeah.
I'm going to start to use that whenever I'm nervous. I'm just going to say, I'm not nervous. Yeah, I'm just excited.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go.
I love that. So talk to us a little bit about the F1 TV team. Do you feel like a family? Do you lean on each other in different ways? What's the dynamic like?
Honestly, they are such good pals, all of them. We are a bit of a dysfunctional family. I always like to say, I think it's so important when you do these jobs to really love the people that you're working with, because you spend so much time together. You're put in really quite vulnerable positions together on air where things can go wrong and whatever else. You've got to have trust and faith in the people around you, and also respect them and look up to them. And I honestly, I know I've been there 4 years now or so. I still feel like the new girl. I still feel like I'm learning all the time. I ask, you know, Will, Jolyon, Alex Jakes, the most stupid questions about things sometimes, because I'm just constantly looking to improve. And so the fact that I can lean on everyone around me to do that without them going, gosh, she doesn't know anything, does she? or laughing about a stupid question is great. And we take the mick mercilessly out of each other as well, which I think is very important to keep a very good sense of humor amongst us all. So yeah, it's amazing. We feel very safe and can really trust each other, which is key.
Yeah, that's so important. Do you have a funniest memory or moment that you can think back on with the team? Is there anything that's ever gone like horrendously wrong, even if it's behind the scenes?
Yeah, there's too many to probably, I'd say the one that went out on air was Blue Man Group.
Oh, that's the best moment.
I was like, what's, just calm down, Carl. Oh my God. And I just couldn't stop. I think there was like delirium, jet lag, caffeine, like all sorts going on. I just couldn't stop the nerves. And like,
they probably loved that.
They did. So I wasn't in Vegas last year, and apparently they were looking for me. And I was like, no, I don't want to see you again. God love them. Oh, but they obviously realized it was a real moment for them as well. That's where like the guys don't rarely see me kind of really break the fourth wall like that and really kind of, you know, just lose complete composure. I kind of always know how to get out of something, but then I really didn't. I couldn't even speak. I was beside myself. So that's probably one of those. But yeah, God, so many hilarious moments where we've just been dying laughing. I remember one at the beginning of testing a couple of years ago when I introduced us. Luckily, this wasn't live, but I said, welcome to Here's What We Learned Today at Testing with me, Will Buxton, and Will just completely cracked up, died laughing. And I was like, what? And he was like, you've just called yourself Will. Like, you've forgotten your own name. And when you listen back, it is exactly that. But instead of like redoing the take, which obviously we should have done, we just carried on. So it was the most, and it was like the first broadcast of the 2023 season or something. And I was like, that is like not how I want to start the year, like forgetting my own name. So yeah, there are plenty of moments like that where we are absolutely dying laughing at the end of each day in the car home.
It's so good. It must make it so fun just to be able to laugh and joke like that.
Yeah.
Well, talking about iconic moments on air, I think we have to talk about your International Women's Day piece in Saudi Arabia. I mean, first of all, I just wanted to personally thank you for saying what you said. I think it meant so much to me personally, but I know to so many women who work in motorsport, who are fans of motorsport. So talk us through that moment for you. How did that come about? Was it scripted at all? What was your reaction to the world's reaction?
Yeah. So I think it was on the 7th, the day before, and I was in the paddock and it was such a bad vibe around. And there was so much discourse online as well that was kind of like, this is what happens when you let women in sport, right? And I was like, I can't stand on air on International Women's Day tomorrow without doing something or saying something. And equally, I had a few women and young women and girls messaging me sort of being like, please, like, why aren't you saying anything? And there was an initial reaction from me being like, well, how is this also my fault? Yeah. But then also I understand that I represent, you know, women and being a female in this sport by being on air, and you do have a duty and a responsibility to do what you can. And so I kind of worked out what I could do, and I scripted it at 1 a.m. I remember sitting in bed like on my phone typing it in notes, and then was basically just given a platform to do it. And I remember walking to that FP3, it was pre-FP3 as well, so it wasn't like, it was like a 10-minute show, so normally I get a lot less nervous for them than a pre-race. I was so nervous, I felt sick to my stomach. I'd been like rehearsing it in my brain all morning, and it was about, I think it's like a minute 15 as well, the whole piece, so it's a long chunk to kind of remember and regurgitate. And oh my goodness, I thought I was gonna die. I was like shaking, my heart was pounding. And then the Ollie Bearman news, the Carlos Sainz was out, Ollie Bearman was in, had broken that morning. So we kind of had to put that in first. So I'm dealing with that on air. And then I'm like, okay. And then producer Joe just goes, International Women's Day. And I
was in your ear.
And I just went, it's also International Women's Day. And I could hear my voice like squeaks because I was so nervous. And then, I went off script and I forgot where I was going, I think twice.
We couldn't
tell.
I watched
it back and I was like, well, that's very kind. I can tell. I'm like, I'd lost my mind at that point. But no, and then came off air and kind of like expected a bit of a reaction. But absolutely nothing could have prepared me for the reaction that we had. And I think it just spoke volumes of how much it did resonate with people, with women, with girls, with guys as well. I think there were a lot of men who wanted to hear that too, who weren't particularly happy with what was going on in the sport at the time. And it was an extraordinary reaction. I'm still to this day so humbled by it and grateful for it, and grateful to have had the opportunity, relieved that like I didn't stumble, I did it right. Because it was a lot of pressure. Did. I'd have been kicking myself if I'd made a mistake. But no, I think it was an important moment that I knew I had to get right. And I'm really grateful that I did. And just humbled is the word, beyond humbled by the reaction.
Yeah, well, we're still grateful to you to this day for doing that and for putting yourself out there. It's not necessarily a fair burden for you to have to carry the weight of women in motorsport on air, but I think you absolutely handled it beautifully and we are all better for it, so...
I think that's really lovely to say, and that's a really interesting way of putting it as well, because it can be a burden in a sense, or it could be seen as a burden, but I think equally it's a huge pressure, I'd say, at times, but also I think with that is a huge privilege that I'm in that position, so I definitely want to do that justice.
Yeah, absolutely. Whether you're traveling, advancing your career, or just love learning, speaking a new language opens up incredible opportunities, and Rosetta Stone makes it easier and more immersive than ever. I've been on a French language learning journey for years, and one of the hardest things can be perfecting my pronunciation, and Rosetta Stone has built-in true accent speech recognition technology that provides real-time feedback, which has helped me sound so much more natural. It's basically like having a personal language coach guiding your accent every step of the way. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Paddock Project listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com today and start learning today. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. In F1, we talk a lot about red flags, but what about green flags? The ones that signal trust, growth, strong relationships. Therapy can help you recognize those green flags, not just in others, but in yourself. And whether you're dating, married, building friendships, or just working on personal growth, therapy gives you the tools to cultivate healthy connections and embody that green flag energy. And in the past, for me, it's always felt very cumbersome to figure out how to book a therapy appointment, find the right therapist, get to their office. And one of the best things about BetterHelp is it's fully online. They match you to a therapist based on your needs, and they have over 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties. Join me in discovering your green flags with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/paddockproject today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/paddockproject. Could your daily routine be full of hormone disruptors? There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. To combat this, we've been loving Hormone Harmony from Happy Mammoth, which contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens that help the body adapt to any stressors. With over 30,000 reviews and counting, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today. Well, I know this is quite a vague and potentially hard question, but what has your experience been as a woman in motorsport? Have you felt welcomed? What's been your experience as a woman?
Honestly, there have been moments, you know, for sure, where you just feel like you maybe not taken as seriously or you're underestimated a little bit. But generally, I have found that paddock to be an incredibly welcoming, and kind space. There are moments, of course, when you first walk in where you think, I I don't know what I'm doing here. And I found F1 initially was like, I'd been invited to play a board game, but I didn't have any idea what the rules were and the etiquette around the paddock and whatever else. But I think that's an element of just being new into a sport and not necessarily being a woman. I think in the paddock there are lots of women doing different jobs, so you feel relatively safe, and there are lots of women in media as well, who are fronting various channels around the world. So you by no means feel a minority in that sense. But what I would say is that women in higher up positions in decision-making roles, we definitely need more of. We obviously don't have any drivers, but F1 Academy has done a really good job of starting something, beginning a platform and a foundation for women to now find a pathway into the higher echelons of the sport. So between like the senior levels of leadership and drivers, we're not seeing as many women there. The reaction I get sometimes on social media, and we know that everyone's got an opinion on social media, is that I'm that kind of token woman, and that, you know, this is, yeah, like if I make a mistake, it'll be because of all women, and women shouldn't be in sport, not just because I've got someone's name wrong because I've been up since whatever and I've had, you know, 3 hours sleep and I'm jet lagged, whatever. Or I've just made a mistake, because of course we do and we're all human. There's an element of get back in the kitchen, diversity, blah, you know, all of that stuff. It's getting less and less as you become more and more established. But I think, you know, men or women all bear a brunt of various social media opinion. for sure, it can just feel a lot more gendered when you're a woman, I think. But I can't speak for what the guys go through, because they also get their fair share of abuse. Bless them.
Social media is not kind to anyone, I would say.
No, exactly. And we should all be kinder on social media, for sure. But it's more, you know, for the guys, it'll be, I don't agree with what you're saying, and I think you're an idiot. For a woman, it'll be, you're a woman and you don't belong here.
Yeah.
So there's a difference. There's a difference.
No, absolutely. And this is something actually a listener wanted to know. It's flipping the script a little bit. As fans, are there any sort of actionable or kind of grassroots level things that we can do to help promote women in motorsport, to help promote sort of the change there?
Oh my gosh, that's a really interesting, I've never been asked anything like that. Honestly, I think just keep doing what you guys are doing, because female fans are growing and growing and growing. I've absolutely loved, and I'm so humbled by the audio of the last part of my International Women's Day moment is a trending TikTok. I sound so old. I'm like, it's a trend on TikTok, but I've just worked out how to use it, like literally. But when I saw it, I was like, this is ridiculous. And there's been like 3,000 videos, and a lot of them were girls trying to find, you know, you know, other female fans and a community. And yeah. I love that. That's so nice. And I think I've met fans at races as well who have met online and then come together and met at a race and know that they'll feel safe in numbers. And it's amazing. I think just keep doing what you're doing. Don't be afraid to get amongst it, you know. Be kind, stay kind. I know everyone like has an opinion and wants to be a fan of a driver, but remain respectful in discourse the way everybody should. And just keep doing it. Keep showing up, because you're very welcome.
I love that. That's amazing. So switching gears to this upcoming season, what do you think is in store for us? I mean, like I said, we were so spoiled last year with the level of competition.
Yeah.
What storyline are you most looking forward to seeing play out?
I am so excited. I think we're going to see obviously the performance of all the cars is going to now massively converge, isn't it? In the final year of these regs. For me, I think the five new rookies on the grid, that's going to be fascinating to see how they hit their marks, how they hit the ground running. Lewis at Ferrari, obviously. I mean, the photos already have gone so hard, haven't they?
It's like, insane.
It's like, I couldn't imagine him in red initially. I was like, I can't imagine it. And now I can't imagine him in anything else. He's just already completely owned that. So I'm excited to see how that plays out, the dynamic between him and Charles. You know, you've got a 7-time world champ, most successful driver of all time, but with Ferrari's prodigal son.
Yes.
So who takes that number one spot? That's what's going to be interesting. If indeed there is a number one spot. And I guess the battle across the board for drivers and construction. I mean, I'm just listing everything.
No, this is great.
I think there's so much. There's so many storylines that we can get our teeth into that I'm really excited for. And I think the drivers is going to be tighter than we saw this year, and potentially between two or three drivers. You know, you're looking at the likes of George Russell, Oscar Piastri, Lando Norris again, Max Verstappen again, Charles Leclerc. You know,
so many.
You could name a number, can't you? And then as well, in the constructors,
who
kind of come out swinging after last year. I've named everything. I'm just really excited.
There's so much. How about for F1 Academy? Is there anything you're looking forward to watching this year?
Yeah, I think, look, Dorian Pan's obviously the favorite, coming into this one. She'll be with Mercedes again, I believe. I think Maya Vug could really give her a run for her money. I think she had a brilliant Abu Dhabi. We're kind of seeing a bit of the best of her towards the last part of the season. So that could be really interesting. We obviously have more teams, more drivers on the grid. So it's expanding as well. Mm-hmm. They're racing in different places, including Vegas, which will be wild. So yeah, I think there'll be some great storylines to come from that. And I'm looking forward to also following Abby Pulling as well. I actually had brunch with her today, which is really lovely.
That's so nice.
She lives really close by, so we managed to have a catch up. And she's sort of fully prepped, preparing for GB3. And I'm intrigued to see how she's going to go in that and where else she may take the career now that she's kind of had the springboard of F1 Academy.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited to follow Abby and all the other women you mentioned. It's going to be such a good year for all of them. Okay, let's end with some rapid fire.
Okay.
very quick gut reactions.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell us who or which team, but do you have a favorite driver or team?
No, I genuinely don't. I genuinely, honestly, and I really hope it comes across that we try and broadcast as much as possible without any bias. However, there are obviously drivers who are a lot of fun to interview or give you more in an interview than others.
Yes.
You can kind of make your minds up who that may be. But yeah, there are some who you think, okay, boy, oh boy, we're in for it.
Yeah. Like, some make the job
and that's good fun.
Easier, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay. How about favorite track or race? If you can say.
No, I think I can say. But also I always end up naming about five when I do this.
That's okay.
So Austin, the US Grand Prix is super special. And I think, you know, America being one of our territories for F1 TV, we get such an amazing reaction there. And I love it so much. Silverstone equally, you're on home soil for me. And I think the race for the last couple of years there has been incredible. So that's always a really big weekend. It just feels massive. In terms of a track, I obviously try and get out and run most of the tracks as well. And there are some tracks where you're running and you think I'm running around, like, not a concrete track, but you know what I mean? You're like, we could maybe be anywhere. This could be any turn. And there are some tracks where I'm like, this is a track. And I think Japan is that. It's so beautiful, flowing, undulating. And then, Mexico with the stadium sections.
Foro Sol, so cool.
Oh my God, incredible. The altitude there, oh my God, I was like crawling around.
Like, am I out of shape or?
Yeah, I know. And then equally Spa. So Spa is just one of the most beautiful tracks, like kind of nestled in the Ardennes. And then I remember running that one last year, the year before, and it was when Pierre Gasly had organized the run for Antoine Hubert, and it was pouring rain. And I set out on this run, and I was honestly, I might as well have jumped in a river. I'd have been drier. You were just soaked, completely soaked. And I was running pretty much on my own, and it was just so atmospheric that it was just beautiful. But Eau Rouge is...
Yeah.
Eau Rouge is hard. You go, Radion, like up the hill and then into Radion. And then the worst part is the Kemmel Strait is like a false flat. So it's kind of 1-2%.
Wow.
So you hit the red at the top and you're like, okay, I'm going to then we'll just keep going.
Yeah.
So I took that one a bit slower, and it's obviously a lot longer than the other tracks as well. I've named loads. Sorry.
No, I love them all. You're naming all the ones on my bucket list. I've been to Mexico and I've been to Coda, but I haven't been to the others, and they're all very high on the list. But the Spa moment of running just must be so beautiful and full circle for you, because wasn't your first F1 race weekend that weekend?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it was a super tough weekend, but you kind of saw the worst of what can happen in motorsport, but then equally the way that the sport came together, some of the best. So it was it's a very tough weekend to be your first, but one, you know, that will stay with me for, forever.
Yeah, that's great. Well, highlight of your broadcasting career so far?
So I would say the Olympics was definitely one of those moments where I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. A couple of years ago, I did the fan forums on stage at Silverstone, and the crowd was, you feel like you are literally floating. The noise, the energy, the excitement, it was so special. It was incredible. And then I would say, like, generally the last season of F1, actually, as a whole, I know that's a bit of a cop-out, but just telling some of the stories that we had last year, Charles at Monaco, Lewis at Silverstone,
Couldn't script that better. It's
just beautiful moments. You know, Lando's first win, Oscar's first win. We had so many beautiful moments, and we are given the privilege of telling those stories. And there were so many moments of last season compared to 23, which obviously you saw this domination, but it's kind of hard to keep telling that story. Last season, we had so many moments where I remembered why I did what I did. And, you know, yeah, that make you you want to do it again and again. Ugh,
that's all you can ask for. And last one, do you have one bucket list item you want to achieve as a presenter?
I'm not saying I've by no means achieved what I want to achieve. I think just keep doing what I'm doing, keep doing more and more of it. I would definitely love to cover a Rugby World Cup at some point as well. I kind of, that 2003 England win at the death of the Johnny Wilkinson drop goal was like
etched in
a
your
highlight
memory
of my life. Yeah, I literally, oh my God, I went mad. I remember running down from my house into town with my best friend with like an England flag draped over. I was about 13 or something, with an England flag draped over my shoulders. And it was like, everyone was like hooting us as we were running down. It was so ridiculous. I don't know what we were doing in town at 13 either. Like, we weren't going to a pub. But yeah, that's special. And I think it's an extraordinary tournament. So, and just, you know, more F1 seasons, more Olympics, more of everything. Yeah.
Well, you're already smashing it. So congrats on everything. We can't wait to continue to follow your journey as you do more and more.
Thank you.
But you have a lot of us cheering for you on this side. So thank you so much.
That's so kind. Thank you for such a wonderful interview as well. And just for, you know, the women and girls listening along and watching F1 TV, thank you for being involved. And always know there's a safe space with us as well.